Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dennis Hannigan, who is the former president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence and founder of the Center's Legal Action Project. He's the author of Lethal Logic, Exploding the Myths That Paralyze American Gun Policy. And also joining us is John Donahue, who is a professor of law at Stanford Law School and research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. He has written numerous publications on gun control policy and is the author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dennis Hannigan and John Donahue.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
And let me begin with Dennis Hannigan. Since you've worked on the Hill for decades trying to get gun control legislation through, and of course today was a dismal day for gun control, although arguably semantically it would be better to have called it gun safety or something else, you know, just as the abortion argument of right to life versus pro-choice isn't in many ways an adequate framing of an issue. But that aside, the president obviously was angry, and he called this a shameful day in the nation's capital, that not even a watered-down bill on expanding background checks for weapon sales even got a hearing.
Well, it is a shameful day. It's a very sad day. The president was angry, and quite frankly, the American people deserve to be angry because their clearly expressed will about common-sense gun laws was frustrated. It was frustrated by acts of political cowardice on the part of a number of United States senators who responded to very well-developed tactics of fear and intimidation that the NRA uses successfully over and over again. And you just have to wonder, I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong with our democracy if a proposal that is supported by 90% of the American people cannot get through the United States Congress. And I think it is extremely important for supporters of common sense gun legislation to, you know, spend some time grieving over this loss, but then to rally and to realize that a great deal of great mobilization has happened over the last several months after Newtown. There is a great deal to build on, and there is far too much at stake for people to simply lick their wounds and go home and give up this noble fight.
And John Donahue, you're the author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. So much of what the proponents of the although the supporters of the NRA and the NRA itself put forth in their arguments ultimately come down to a kind of bizarre notion that the status quo is acceptable, apart from the fact that, you know, you're able to explode the logic of much of their arguments. This is clearly not being driven by logic on the anti-gun control side.
No, it's largely being governed by fear. I think Dennis correctly noted the public opinion poll preferences for the overwhelming majority for the passage of these laws. But in those same public opinion polls, there also was expressed concern that the passage of these background checks, universal background checks, might lead to some form of confiscation. And even though that view is completely nonsensical, a very substantial number, it wasn't a majority, but a substantial number of people bought that argument because the NRA, which purports to speak for lawful gun owners, was trumpeting that idea. And when an organization that you believe in tells you something over and over again, you tend to believe it. In this case, it's simply a lie, and I think the president was right to call it a willful lie on the part of the NRA, because there wasn't the slightest possibility of gun confiscation, unless you're talking about preventing a felon or someone who's mentally ill from getting a gun, which is current law.
But John Donahue, the NRA has 4 million members. That's 1% of the American population. So how does the 1% have trump the 99%?
You're right. The NRA is a very small organization. For example, the AARP has 40 million Americans. So if the people were to express their preferences with the same intensity as the NRA, you would see some change. But you have to remember, the NRA doesn't get its power from the 4 million. The NRA gets its power from its money and its connection to the gun manufacturing and gun sellers' money and power. And that's a potent force that has to be reckoned with if you want to prevail in Congress. And we saw that many congressmen are both attentive to the benefits that NRA sponsorship can give them and also fearful that the NRA can marshal not just the 1%, but this much larger number. It was something like 48% of Americans thought that these laws might lead to gun confiscation. And that fear was a real one on the part of many gun owners, even though there's absolutely no truth to that position. But as I said, the NRA is very effective in misleading, much the way the tobacco industry for many years misled people on the dangers of smoking.
Well, let me turn then to Dennis Hannigan, who is a former president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence and author of Lethal Logic, Exploding the Myths That Paralyze American Gun Policy. The final vote on the watered-down Manchin-Toomey plan was 54 to 46. So you had the odd symmetry of four Republicans joining with the Democratic majority and four Democrats joining with the Republican minority. Now, on Dianne Feinstein's update of the 1994 ban on assault weapons, the vote was 40 to 60. So that really went down in flames. So what's your sense then of is this going to change? Are they going to do something about this filibuster, this ridiculous usurpation of power that the Republicans have in the Senate, where you have to have 60 votes to get anything even discussed?
Well, I certainly hope so. It would appear that in a democracy, the majority should prevail. And there may be some safeguards that we want to build into our system to protect the rights of the minority. But this is a situation in which the minority can frustrate every piece of legislation. And we didn't have this situation throughout most of our history. This is a very recent development that you have to have 60 votes in order to get anything passed. So we need to reconsider those rules in the Senate because this is a problem of the majority of the American people having their views constantly frustrated. And the gun issue, I think, is the single most dramatic illustration of the problem. It is almost unheard of for a legislative idea to have the support of 90% of the American people. This idea of expanded background checks had that level of support, and that was not reflected in this vote today. Now, I will say this. There has been progress made politically on this issue. This issue was in the political wilderness several months ago, and that changed dramatically right after the Sandy Hook shooting, where you had the Obama administration that had run from the gun issue throughout its 4 years, embraced the gun issue because it was the right thing to do, and put aside all of the political fears that had paralyzed the Obama administration in doing anything about guns. The fact that you had a Senator Manchin of West Virginia and a Senator Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, two pretty conservative senators sitting down and actually crafting a bill to close the gun show loophole, that represents progress. It means that there are senators from high gun-owning states who are willing to let reason prevail and think they can explain to their gun-owning constituents the reason to do these things. And so there is something to build on. What's critical is that the pro-gun control forces must not melt away. The Obama administration must not retreat from the strong stand that it's made. And these politicians who went against their own constituents and in favor of the gun lobby need to pay a price at the polls. That's absolutely critical. There needs to be substantial political money on the gun control side, and I think that's beginning to happen. And there needs to be a building of a new movement for sensible gun laws.
And again, John Donahue, professor of law at Stanford Law School and author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. There was from the gallery shouts from a woman whose daughter was shot at Virginia Tech and another woman who was a survivor of the mass shooting at Tucson. They shouted, "Shame on you." They need to be ashamed of themselves before they were escorted out. They shouted, they have no souls, they have no compassion. How about what happened to the emotions that followed the Sandy Hook massacre? Is there a way to harness these things and retain them, or do we suffer from compassion fatigue? Why is it that people sort of give up so easily when they're so enraged after these hideous events, which of course will happen again?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the sad parts of the American political process that the public remains excited about an issue, but as I wrote, like within hours of the killing at Newtown, the American public will lose interest much more quickly than the NRA will lose interest. And so I think Dennis's point is a good one, that when 90+% of the American people want something, they have the power to make that happen, but they will only exercise that power and achieve their goal if they show the same intensity that the NRA and the gun manufacturers show in this country. And so far that hasn't happened. But this may be an opportunity to marshal that political force and show that the NRA does not run policy in the United States, but the American people run policy in the United States.
But already the press is saying that the president lost. I mean, obviously, this was not an issue he wanted, and Dennis said the Democrats have been pretty cowardly on this issue, but it was foisted on them. But the idea that the president had lost, not the American people, I often wonder what planet we're on here.
Well, I will say I think that the president, although he lost this battle, he knows that there is an ongoing war. And it's a political war. I mean, as the president said today, politics triumphed over reason today. So we're going to have to engage on the political battlefield, and the president is very capable of skillfully doing that. And the first opportunity will come in the next midterm elections. I think what he is going to do is he's going to stay in the game. He's going to use this as an organizing tool to change the political dynamic around this issue. And that fundamentally is what needs to happen. And as I said before, I think there was progress made toward a recasting of the political dynamic in this vote today. You had some rock-ribbed NRA supporters. These were senators who we couldn't hope to get on any kind of gun vote in the past, voting for closing the gun show loophole, and indeed helping to craft that bill. So this is progress. Now we need to show that those folks who step forward and were courageous can survive electorally, and the people who voted with the gun lobby and against the American people need to be put at risk politically.
And John Donahue, mm-hmm. How can you marshal reason and make that a stronger weapon than I guess, paranoid fantasies or whatever. How do you describe Senator Grassley and this constant refrain that criminals don't, you know, background checks don't affect criminals, as though not having background checks is somehow better than having them? I mean, where's the logic? And you've written a book, Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. So, you know, you win the arguments, but you lose the war.
Yeah, it is true that the NRA has done a remarkably effective job in scaring people in certain instances and then misleading them in other instances. And it really becomes the responsibility of academics to step up to the plate a little bit more, the media to correctly identify the good studies that are out there and undermine the totally incredible and implausible claims that the NRA frequently spouts, and then for the American people to step up. Because if the American people care about gun violence and want to take reasonable steps to reduce it, as the public opinion polls show, they have the power to make that happen, but they have to remember it come election time. They can't just think about it in the days and weeks following the latest mass killing. You know, in Australia, when they had a horrific mass shooting, within a very short number of weeks, they had imposed the most stringent gun controls and mandatory buybacks. And they went from a situation where they had had 13 mass shootings over a previous 16-year period to none in the successive 16-year period. So things can be done in this domain, but it does take concerted and intentional effort to make politicians stand up on the right side. 90% speaks loudly to politicians if they think people are going to vote on that. If they think the only people who are going to vote on that issue are the people who have been misled by the NRA, then they'll listen to the people who are misled by the NRA.
Well, just in the last minute, Dennis Hannigan, given that the NRA is only 4 million people, they are the 1%, yet they have the ability to thwart the 90% in the United States Senate, and they probably have even more ability in the House of Representatives, given the Republican control. So how do you break that knot? I mean, is Bloomberg financing candidates? Is it a money race? What's the future going to be?
Well, there are many elements to a winning effort on this issue. Certainly, the investment of significant political resources is an absolute necessity. Mayor Bloomberg has begun to expend significant resources in this area. I think that actually Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly are going to be raising some money. So that's one element. But I also want to go back and really pay tribute to scholars like John Donahue, who have contributed so much to our knowledge of this issue. I think John may have mentioned the comparison to the tobacco issue. I now work in the tobacco control movement, and it's a very apt comparison because part of what changed our nation's approach towards tobacco is the development of solid research showing that tobacco products do, in fact, cause death and disease, that tobacco products are, in fact, addictive. Sure. And overcoming the efforts of the tobacco industry to introduce doubt about those propositions. One of the things we've missed in the gun control world is adequate financing of research. And that's one of the most important initiatives that the president has undertaken here, is that he has basically ordered CDC and other agencies to get back into the business of doing research on the gun issue. And
well, Dennis, I'm afraid
we need that to happen. It's going to be very important, but there are many elements to a winning effort on this.
Well, I thank both of you gentlemen for joining us here today. Dennis Hannigan, former president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence and author of Lethal Logic, Exploding the Myths That Paralyze American Gun Policy, and John Donahue, the author of Shooting Down the More Guns, Less Crime Hypothesis. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the new Pope continuing the war against American nuns.
I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right.
right in the head, even if he had to wrong someone. I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head.